Okay, so Shannon has given an overview of the tracking network, and Matt has talked about the data. So in my session, what I'm going to look at is how you learn more information about this data that will be on the tracking network. So if you'd like to know how the data was collected, what kind of quality challenges are included in the data set, how do you get a copy of the data, and that's what I'm going to cover with the metadata. Okay, so the outline of my presentation is I'll look at just briefly the functions of the tracking network. I'll look at a definition of metadata and what that means to the tracking network. And I'll just give a brief overview of some of the tracking network metadata products, that is a metadata profile and the metadata creation tool. And then I'll just go through how we plan to use standard vocabularies on the tracking network. Okay, so Shannon showed you the functions of the tracking network, and what we're going to zero in on this presentation will be the describe and discover data, how the tracking network will allow users to describe, the people who give us data to describe the information and users to discover this data. So, so the tracking network will allow the description and discovery of data through metadata. So a very broad or general definition of metadata is data about data. So it's something as broad as that. It can mean several things to several users, professionals, and organizations. So for the tracking network, when we talk about metadata, we're talking about descriptive metadata. That is information that describes the content, the quality, and the context of a data resource for the purpose of facilitating identification and discovery. So the tracking network will provide a standard way of describing data on the tracking network. So what we're looking at is standardizing the structure of the metadata so as to enhance its use. And also the metadata will facilitate the search and discovery of the data sets on the tracking network. So this will sort of like enhance communication amongst the public health practitioners by promoting a common understanding or same understanding of the meaning and representation of the data elements that we're going to use to describe the data. So there exists very many standards out there for describing data, but through a process, the metadata subgroup of the tracking network chose the Federal Geographic Data Committee data standard. And there are several reasons for choosing this, but one of them was because it was able to describe very well the geographic and non-geographic data sets. And this is the nature of the data sets that will be on the tracking network. And also, through a presidential executive order, all federal geographic data sets have to be described using the FGDC. So that was another good reason to choose FGDC to have it. So FGDC has about 200 metadata elements, and the tracking network crafted a profile of about 52 elements from the 200 sets. So there were very many elements that we could choose to describe our data, and then we sort of like tested them and chose the 52 that we would adequately describe the tracking network data sets. So some of the basic elements that will be used to describe the data would be the data set title, its purpose, a brief abstract about the data, the time period of the data set, when it was collected, more information about the attributes of the data, the spatial domain, some keywords describing the concepts of the data, and also some distribution information to sort of help a user find out how they can get the data set. So this is just an Excel spreadsheet showing the tracking network metadata profile. So what it shows is just the element name, the field as it appears in FGDC, and some short description, a citation, and the element type and the name of the element. So this is just a snapshot of the spreadsheet that we use to put together our 52 elements. So from this profile, the metadata subgroup collaborated with Northrop Grumman, a contractor with CDC, to develop a web-based tool that was based on the metadata profile to allow data stewards to create their metadata. So what we have here is the login page of the metadata creation tool. Right now, it's still in beta version. So even if we have already launched a network, this tool is not yet available, and we're hoping to launch it along with a secure network soon. So once a user logs in, or a metadata creator logs into the tool, this is the view that they would have. So the metadata creation tool allows, or sort of arranges, the elements in the FGDC 7 sections. We have the identification, the data quality, entity and attributes, distribution, metadata, and contacts. And then within each section, it's further grouped metadata elements. For example, in the identification, we have under citation the category, the publication date, and the title of the data set. So what we'll be discussing more today would be the keyword section. So this is a very important section of the metadata, because it is the words that will facilitate the discovery, or the search or discovery of data on the tracking network. So when users are searching for data, the concept that they will use will be matched against what will be put in the keywords of the metadata to help them to discover if that information exists on the tracking network. So we all know the challenges of using standard vocabularies, because very many vocabularies exist, and because of that, there are very many terms that are used to describe the same concept. Sometimes some people use non-standard terminology, and almost with inconsistent meaning. So what we're trying to do with the tracking network is to use standard vocabularies for consistent representation of the tracking data set concepts, and also for the accurate representation of these concepts. So by using standard vocabularies, we're hoping to enhance data searches and discovery in the tracking network, and then also provide semantic interoperability among the tracking network systems. So this is the process that we are going about to implement the use of standard vocabulary on the tracking network. So what we began with was to develop some data search use cases. So we say that a user can search for data using a tracking data concept. The concept could be broad, it could be a narrower concept, or it could be a synonym of both the broad or the narrow concept. And the user can also search using a keyword, and we defined a keyword to be would be a non-standard synonym of the concepts that are above, the broad or narrow concepts, or other keywords. So I'll give an example of some of this in a few slides. So the content workgroup teams, you saw a slide of the collaborative teams that we have that Shannon showed earlier. So within the content workgroup teams, they identify the data concepts, or which concepts defined the data that they were going to put on the tracking network. And also they identify the code systems for these concepts and additional keywords that were not in the data concepts. And then we worked with the FinVads vocabulary staff to identify synonyms for these tracking concepts. And we use the unified medical language system. So the FinVads staff also helped us to identify from the White House eGov consolidated health information vocabulary standards for the tracking concepts. And then working together with them, we linked the concepts and the synonyms with the keywords. So this is just a high level design of what we're putting together. So we talked about having the tracking network having sort of like a broad concept. And within each and every broad concept, we will link together synonyms that we found in UMLS. And then each broad concept could be further broken down into a narrower concept. And then the narrower concept would also have synonyms that we got from UMLS. And additionally, we would have non-standard information that we called a keyword that would be also linked to the tracking concept. So using an example from the data that will be on the network, a birth defects example would be the spina bifida from the British Pediatric Association. And a narrower concept of that will be spina bifida with hydrocephalus. So from the tracking concept, we linked spina bifida with other synonyms that were available in UMLS. And just to mention, UMLS has about, I think, over 100 terminologies that are used. So all of them are mapped together to a single concept. So all those were pulled out from the UMLS, and we shall link them to the tracking concept. So within our metadata, we'd have the broad and the narrow concept as a keyword, and then these synonyms will sort of exist outside of it. We haven't yet implemented it. This is just the design, so that when a user is searching using a broad concept or a synonym of it, it will pull out the metadata from the synonyms that because the synonyms have been sort of mapped to the tracking broad concept. Okay, so you've seen this before in the two previous presentations. So this is the tracking portal homepage. So what I'm going to show you is how then a user can search for data on the tracking network. So the tracking network will provide, of course, a search functionality, and the search is going to be two kinds of searches. We have the quick search, where a user can just type in a keyword, and that keyword will be searched against the title and the keywords that I just described in the metadata. Or the user could have an advanced search where they can combine different keywords, different elements from the metadata, and also provide a time component of the information that they're looking for. So I'll just look at the quick search. So this is from the indicators and data tab. So if a user was to type in something like birth defects, and they're looking for data with a broad concept, birth defects. So this is a list of how the metadata records will be returned that have birth defects, either in the keywords or in the title. So this is a list of the metadata records that describe the data that has been provided to the network. So you can look at it briefly. It'll just provide the title, the abstract, and the time period of the data. But you can view the full record. And when you click on view full metadata record, it'll display it in the FGDC format with the different sections, the identification, data quality, entity and attribute distribution, and so on. So this is just a screenshot of the advanced search, which allows you at the bottom here to combine different elements of the metadata. You can choose, for example, the abstract and the keyword, or maybe you can choose a location and some text, maybe in the purpose of the abstract, and also choose from the different ways of time period context has been displayed here. So it will give you the same, the results in the same way, maybe not the same results, but the results in the same way. Okay, so you also saw the query screen from the previous presentations. So one of the things that enhancements that will be that we hope will come in the subsequent versions of the portal that will come up is, besides print, you'd have download data. So after searching for your metadata and finding it and clicking on viewing the metadata or view tables and charts, you would be able to download it in a different format. So it's not in the current format of the portal, but it will be a coming enhancement. So these are some of the next steps that we're planning. So right now we have sort of put together these concepts and the synonyms and the keywords. So right now we're through the content work groups, they're sort of validating the keywords, and they're going to also develop additional search and use cases for more data that will be coming on the network. So right now we have sort of like single concept data. We have birth defects, we have breast cancer and others. But now, as an enhancement, we are hoping to have pre-linked data, that is environment and health data linked together. So that means that we'll have to have additional search use cases and also vocabulary associations for that. So that is something that we're going to look at. And then also, we're looking at developing an interface from our metadata to the FinVADS application service that has just been developed, so that when the users are selecting the keywords and the vocabularies, that they can link directly to FinVADS service for that, instead of typing that in. And then we're also looking at beyond searching, looking at creating a standard environmental health vocabulary, and we're hoping to partner with other federal partners, that EPA and the others out there, on how to go about this. So just as a summary, we just looked at the functions of the tracking network, but in particular how to describe how the tracking network will provide the describing and discovery of data. We've looked at what metadata is to the tracking network, and we say that for the tracking network, metadata is descriptive metadata that allows you to describe the content and the quality of the data set. And we've also looked briefly at the metadata profile, which we crafted from the FGDC metadata content guide. And then we also looked at the metadata creation tool and how we're looking at implementing the use of standard vocabularies on the tracking network. So I'd like to acknowledge these people who helped us in these efforts. Sundar Ganesan, the vocabulary specialist with FinVADS, Patrick Wall, who's the environmental health tracking branch, in environmental health tracking branch, and also co-chair of S&D, and of course the metadata subgroup that worked on this, and the content work groups that looked at the concepts and helped us with that also. Okay.
So each of our three presenters has actually used less time than they predicted, which is great because that means we have a lot of time for questions and conversations. And what I'd like to do is to ask each of the three of you to pull up a chair, perhaps over here, and then as questions arise, you can choose who might be the person you want to answer. I just to make a comment myself, I've written down a whole bunch of questions, but of course, as moderator, I go last. I'm actually, why don't you come out so we can see you? We don't want you hidden back here. Scoot on around over here. Yeah.
I got it.
Someone know how to shut that off? I'm one of the people in the group that's in the audience that's learning about this really as an introduction, and I have to say it's a wonderful system that you've developed, very impressive. And I was tempted to send a BlackBerry message to some colleagues saying, hey, check this out, but probably that's not what the moderator should be doing while the speaker's talking. So let's open it up for questions. What would people like to know more about this interesting project? Okay, great. And stand up and tell us who you are. We have to hear over the hum of the projector on the computer.
Yes, the portals are meant to be multifaceted. We may be looking at the public to get general information, but ultimately the goal is to overlap the health and environmental data. And we all know as a group that that's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing for people to buy in to be able to show this in the public. And that's really where the secure portal comes in, and eventually we'll move to show more of that to the public as it becomes available for us to do so.
And so what is the exact format of the data that you're currently accepting from various contributors?
What do you mean by format? How are we getting it, or?
Well, obviously you're using FinMS for your transport.
That's correct.
I mean, in terms of the data format itself, are you using HL7 messages, or do you have some?
Everything's stored in XML format.
XML.
Uh-huh, and it's transmitted in the XML format, which allows us to check it for validity. And then Matt mentioned Schematron, which is where we're moving to validate more other pieces of the data.
Have you been providing the contributors like with
Yes, for all the different data areas. Yes.
That's a proprietary, I'm sorry, Christy Atkinson and the University, that's a proprietary
XML?
Yeah.
The format of the XML?
Your template is proprietary, it's not based on HL7 message structures or a reference model.
Matt probably can answer that better.
Each content work group came up with what we're calling a nationally consistent data measure, and that has the file layout of the pertinent information for what we were going to use on the network for it. So each content area has a unique group of variables that come in to define it, and that was defined collaboratively by a group that's specific to that area.
Yes, in the back.
So as I understand,
tell us who you are.
Environmental public
think from the, you know, I may not be the one to totally answer that. I think from the get-go, we never wanted it to be silos. And we've had some wonderful success, and a lot of our state grantees are in here, with states working together to come up with ideas and share information and share knowledge across the different groups. And I think we've done that to some extent. In fact, I think we've done it to a big extent and continuing to do that now. I don't know if that quite answers what you're getting at, but.
Well, it sounds like your question is entirely answered. Do you want to follow up or press a bit? Maybe one of the other panelists could help.
Are you one day? Right, but that's exactly what you're saying, is that the states themselves have built another system that isn't interoperable with the rest of the state systems. And unfortunately, we've run into problems where states mandate what they're to use and how they're to use it. And that's when I mentioned this framework, all we can do is lay it out. We really hope that they use systems that are already in place, that they work with their geospatial group to do that, that they don't recreate the wheel and tunnel themselves in. But we can't dictate how they do it because their state says what they have to do.
So. Can I address this issue from a, perhaps an example? So let's say that the state of California has a criteria for how it describes deaths due to particular cancer. But when you all get together with this project, the criteria that you agree upon may be a little different from that. So now somebody that's interested in California might go to a California report and see one number and come to this and perhaps see another number. How do you reconcile that type of issue? Is that part of what you're getting at?
No, not at all. Those are, that's how you roll up the data.
Okay. Good example.
Mm-hmm. So now you have two competing systems of information with two competing definitions, both titled the same thing in the same department.
Right. So I get the sense that you're talking about issues within the state, whereas this project is really aggregating across states, which sounds like related challenges. But let's address the question or the example that you gave. How do you deal with a situation where the state has used one definition for something? It could be anything, and now in aggregate for this system, you're using a slightly different definition, so that theoretically, somebody could get two answers depending on where you go. How have you dealt with that?
Well,
And here's the dilemma.
How do you maybe consolidate other than them just shutting us out of it?
Right. Here's the dilemma you also run into. If each state, one of the whole points of having the national and consistent data measures is if each state does it differently, you're never going to be able to compare state A to state B. This number means nothing when you're looking at a different calculation of how they do it. So if we do, even though it's additional data at the states, if we have national consistent data across a national level, then you can look at state A and state B and compare the numbers. And eventually that's what we would love to be able to do as more states come on board and data goes up.
From multiple sources, coming from different states because they've defined it, there is that ultimate Venn diagram of the overlap. Now, when we structure concepts the same way, it takes analysis and collaboration and participation of everybody who wants to have a stake in this. And if you don't participate, then I'm sorry if the standards don't come and meet your, and it costs you more to do it. But if you participate, we have, I've been involved in several different projects at different times. We are interested in knowing what the wisdom on the ground is. You know stuff about this that at the rolled up aggregate level, we don't have those details. And when we find the sweet spot of that overlap where most people think this is important, and we're going to ask you to collect two more data items, and we're going to acknowledge, geez, we've got five things other people didn't think about, and share that as potentially available but not required. We can get a tremendous valuable data set that gives us core sets of numbers and clues on how to drill out and explore differently. But it all comes from participation and contributing your knowledge at the time of analysis. It cannot be dictated from above just because we're very smart, but we're not brilliant. We're good at what we do, but it only comes from knowing what you know on the street.
I do think that there is maybe one of the few ways to encourage interoperability and discourage siloed data systems is to have a grant requirement that says that you'll identify other people doing these activities.
I do understand that, and that needs to be in who is sponsoring the grant. But I understand that. But the CDC, as a non-regulatory agency, there is such pushback when everybody wants to be standardized. But you all better standardize it to my way, because I'm not changing. And that's so, if you see one public health office and one public health operation, you know one. We're trying to find the common function, and the only way we can do that is for the collaboration and to look at that overlap and identify the small wins so that we can build on that and then grow to a greater thing.
As someone who's been on both sides of the CDC RFA process, the CDC can push that adherence to certain things so far, and then it's a collaborative activity.
If the states want the brilliance happens in smaller pockets.
Okay, I've got two hands. I see one here and back there, so Steve.
I think there's kind of a common answer to both your question, I didn't get to who you were, and Lois's question, and that's the word respect. The folks at CDC might well like to see what Lois wants, which is to say that states develop data systems which are integrated so that it's not just environmental public health data on a web-based data query system like you just saw demonstrated, but also other agency data that's available through the same mechanism using the same user interface in a way that is familiar to users and is easier for them. But CDC can't dictate that states do that because it's somewhat more difficult in some states than others. So what CDC has put in the RFA is that states do the following things and then encourage us to integrate to the extent that we can, but that's a respect for the principle of, well, federalism. So as a result, I think there are a number of states who are working very hard to integrate environmental public health tracking into existing integrated systems. There are other states like mine, Washington State, which is trying to building new public access web-based data query system based on the Environmental Public Health Tracking Network, which we're not calling the Washington State Environmental Public Health Tracking Network, partly because it's too many words. We are calling it the Washington Tracking Network. And we're doing that not just because it's too many words, which is the simple answer, but also because we very much want to build an integrated system that is not limited solely to environmental public health data. So that respect piece, that federalism respect piece, is one answer. But the respect piece also answers your question, which is to say, I think we've got to have respect for users. And by that I mean that discrepancies in data will always exist, whether those discrepancies are based on differences in definition for measures, or whether they're based on the data itself. Data that is has traditionally been sent by states to CDC, whether that's for cancer or for lead or whatever else, gets submitted a certain amount of time ago. And in the interim after the state submits that data, it continues correcting and updating its data system so that the numbers are inevitably going to differ on the national portal than they are on the state portal for that reason alone. The rates are going to differ because we use different denominators often. The feds use, well, U.S. Census. We are told in my state, you don't use the U.S. Census, you use the Washington State generated data. So data discrepancies will always exist for those reasons and a whole host of other ones which are too complex to go into in a short comment here. The respect piece is that we explain that to users. We give users information about why these data discrepancies might arise. And I think it's important to do that, to have respect. Both, I want CDC to respect what we want to do and have to do in states, and I want us to respect the users because, well, frankly, a lot of them are smarter than I am.
Not that many. the gentleman in the yellow shirt, you had your hand up. Or somebody in the back had your hand up. Go ahead. I mean, this is fascinating. This discussion of state flexibility, national standards, has been going on for decades. But the ante gets up when it's this new type of systems. Yes, we'll come back over. Go ahead.
Different topic.
Yes, sure. Great.
Susan Katz, CDC. You said something about shortening the data validation cycle.
Right. Yeah.
I take it that you mean a data set, and not just individual data items. But I'd like to hear more about that. And it sounds like useful to other data collection programs.
Sure.
And what were your requirements, not necessarily about the particular tool, but what needs are you looking to be met?
Well, one way we're looking at doing that is using a tool called Schematron.
Yeah.
It's a tool called Schematron. And
okay, what's the, paraphrase the question for us?
The question was basically, what are we doing to shorten the data validation cycles? And one of the tools that we are going to implement on that we hope will implement on the next data collection cycle is a tool called Schematron. And since we have a standard data set we're trying to collect per content area, we're hoping to be able to run a smart XML program on that data so the state can run it on their end as a for instance before they submit it to us, so they don't immediately get kicked back because there's something wrong with the data set. So they can kind of in-house run the Schematron and check their own data, then submit it in through the whole process before we start looking at it the first time. So we basically, our contractors and the members of our science development team basically had to validate each of these data sets individually as they came in last time. So we're trying to automate that process and shorten the cycle from us saying there's something wrong with your data set. Maybe something as simple as there's three missing counties. There aren't zero records in here. You've missed a couple records. Simple things like that we're hoping the cycle can be shorter on the state's end to figure out these are missing data elements. They can correct it before they submit that data set into us and it goes through the whole cycle. So that's one way that we're hoping to shorten that cycle.
Other questions? Yes. Yeah, stand up and let's know who you are.
I don't understand it. My name's Eric.
Okay.
I'm Chris Clark. I'm from EPA. We actually deployed a set of web services that allow you to both parse the schema and use Schematron automatically from anywhere. So the states or your submitters can submit directly to it, run the business rules, and get responses back directly. And they wouldn't actually have to have a local version of that. It works really well. We've actually optimized copy of that to try out?
Yes, we would.
Let me interject a question here, and then we'll get back to the audience. I want to have a question for Gonzo in terms of the metadata. One of the slides we saw says that we don't now have the capacity, but we will have the capacity to do correlations so that you might look at the level of some environmental contaminant and see whether there's an association with between that and a particular cancer rate. How will you deal from the metadata perspective when people start trying to put those, make those types of comparisons or correlations?
Okay, that is something that has been discussed a lot since we started putting together the tracking network. And one of the ways the metadata can handle that is to provide maybe recommendations on how you would be able to integrate a particular data set with another, or that is already integrated, what are the best uses of that data and any limitations towards it. So that is one thing that the metadata would be able to handle. So if you have any caveats, any limitations to what the user may be able to do with the data, you can include that in the metadata, and they can be able to view it before they put together the two data sets.
But how do you deal with the plausibility issue? I mean, somebody could theoretically compare two things that you might not a priori think have anything to do together, but they just are curious or playing. How do you deal with that you would say for this environmental exposure, here are the things that do or do not make sense to look at? And just to press you a bit on the issue.
Okay, I think right now we have some sort of like what we mentioned, some sort of caveats before that include something like that, what you may or may not do with the data, or any conclusions that would come about that would not be subject to those who put the data up there for now. And again, that is something that people have discussed a lot about in the tracking network. I don't know if anyone else has, any of our grantees have anything else to add to that. Yes.
You can use element 1, 3, and 17 as linkers, as comparators.
For as far as I understand, we haven't yet gotten there yet, but that is something that we are working towards. But I'll let somebody else who's worked on that maybe can help with that.
Other questions? Yes.
Have there been any engagements with the
Can you speak up a bit? We can't hear you.
Have there been any what?
Smacked our heads and, yeah. Oh, why didn't we think of that?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Or is it just still
you know, I know there's been a number of fields that the content work group team put together that when they actually started seeing them come up on the screen and everything, they were like, we should have combined this in 5 years and 3 years, not this, you know. So, yeah, they have definitely come up with some improvements they want to do on the aggregation of the data, without a doubt. And they're going to start working very hard on redefining some of the existing ones, as well as taking that knowledge on the new ones that they're trying to build.
Yeah.
Andrew Hunter from Missouri. Do you have any plans to look at a finer level than counting?
Well, we would love to. Just getting that data is not easy to do.
Yeah.
So when we've started building it, we've taken the data that we could get. We've taken the data that we have and started it. We have a census tract level of some data, but it's nothing's on the portal nothing's available for that at this time. Now, that may be different for some of the states and the data that they have, but not at the national level at this point.
Okay. One of the things that I think we're going to want to explore is, for many of the measures that you look at now on the national portal and many more in the future when more data becomes available, if you look at the data at the county level, particularly if you stratify by gender or age group, you get a lot of numbers, you get a lot of cells where the numbers are suppressed because they're tiny numbers. And that's a bit of a dilemma because people in counties tend to want their own county data. So if you suppress a lot of it all the time, they get a little annoyed with you. So we've been struggling with other ways to approach that. And one of the ways that I think has got some promise is to allow the users to look at the geography not broken down by county, particularly in data sets where the originating geographic identifier, the locational reference, was a zip code rather than a address or a county, then you can allow the user to look at data displayed by three-digit zip codes. Three-digit zip codes have an interesting advantage in that in rural areas where populations are sparse, they're fairly large. And in urban areas where populations are dense, they're fairly small. So there'll be multiple three-digit zip codes in a highly urban county. And that allows the people in the urban county who were complaining that, you know, my county's big, you can't display one rate for the entire county, to in fact get sub-county estimates.
It's a little hard to develop population estimates.
Well, that's just where I was going. But there's one other advantage, but that's, I was going to get last to that big disadvantage, it's the population data for it. I don't think that's insoluble. The problem is you don't get it from the U.S. Census. You have to go to private contractors to get those data. But there are firms like Claritas and others that make that data available on contract to government agencies for a reasonable price. And there's multiple uses that agencies can put that data to once they get it. So there are good reasons to enter into those contractual relationships. But the other advantage for the user, particularly in the public, is that a number of people do simply not know what county they live in.
But they know there's a
particularly true in the Northeast, where county government is, well, almost non-existent. Everybody knows their zip code. The three-digit zip code is a very familiar concept to most public users. So it's got that additional advantage. So it's not a perfect solution because of the denominator problem, but it's not a bad solution. It's one I think we ought to be investigating further.
It's in the back. There's two questions back.
I had one comment would be is that might be an opportunity where, from a national stage, purchasing zip code related data that would be very viable for both states and the national would be a very key element that you could purchase. So I think considering those things would be very nice for all.
I'll make a comment about purchasing data in Claritas. I've worked in local public health. Cynthia Young is the CPA now. But we work with our regional.
Other questions or comments? Let me just pose a comment. I noticed the web page, the sign-on page, shows someone sneezing into a handkerchief they're holding in their hands. I would posit that perhaps you should change it to doing this, which is the public health message that we're trying to impart around influenza. It's sort of the, you know, thinking across program issues. I have a question too. I'm curious. I was struck by the very first comment you made that the Pew Trust or Pew Foundation was struck that we didn't have a data set like this, and therefore the problem was that we don't have a data set. Which I was curious if in that report they also pointed to problems that not having the data created, or you know, what was it that couldn't be done absent something like this? Did that arise?
I cannot speak for that. Patrick? Yeah.
Okay.
Steve, no.
Yeah. I'm Mike Perry with CDC. I was working at ATSDR when that happened, the Pew Commission report came out. What really generated that report was a situation in Fallon, Nevada, where there was a cluster of childhood leukemia cases, a very small town. Nobody knew why those children had leukemia. And it took years of investigation to try to track down some of the reasons why it might have. I think they finally came up with some heavy poisoning in the water, I believe. I just need to keep track of it, but it took a very long time. But that was one of the first issues that got the attention of, I think Senator Reid and Senator Clinton at the time. Was that the fact that there was no clear answer to that question. And it took a very long time to come up with an answer to that question. And so they wanted, and once the Pew Commission started looking into, well, what data is out there and how could they have connected the dots to figure out what the problem was, they found out there really are no data sets connected up with health effects and health type data with environmental type data. So they have environmental data, there's a lot of environmental data out there, there's a lot of health-related data out there, but nothing that brings the two together. And so that was what started the whole thing.
Any other comments or questions? Well, if not, there's no rule that says we can't break up a few minutes early. Let me, before we thank the presenters, let me thank the audience. A really wonderful discussion, and I think the participation from the audience added a lot to the session, but also let us again thank all three of our presenters.